I got it. Thank you, Ursula.
All righty, here we go. Round of the bend, 1107 of the Tom McCurley Show, the Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. Hey, there's a wooden wagon that we use. Thing dates back to the 1840s, and then we use it to spread news and opinion throughout the entire three-hour show. And the wagon coming along now. Normally, Tom is the guy driving the wagon, but it turns out the thing is a self-driving wagon. Always a celebrity seated somewhere nearby with a teeny tiny lady in a pickle jar on their lap, and it looks like, oh, it's Zach Galifianakis.
You know what?
What?
I don't like your attitude, to be quite honest.
Wow.
Okay.
Because, you know what? You're too young to be smoking pot.
Right.
And, you know, pee-peeing in buckets.
Yes.
And driving up and down the highway fast.
Yeah, drive it up. Zach seems to have a problem with a teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar, Tom. All righty. Hey, big news yesterday. Seattle got themselves an NHL team. I bought tickets to the thing because I look at it as like a financial thing. I thought, it's going to be a hot ticket. I'll buy it. And then in a couple of years, by 2021 or whenever, I'll be able to sell these tickets. I didn't realize. I had to slap $1,000 down, I think, to reserve the tickets. And then I bought two. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know where my seats are. But I just looked at it as like, buy 20. 21 or 2020. When do they say this thing's going to be done? When are they going to drop the puck for the first time?
2021.
2021.
Yeah.
Okay. By that time, my $1,000 will be worth like $3,000. So I thought, I didn't really care necessarily about the hockey part of it. I looked at the financial part of it. But you watch a lot of people yesterday going all cuckoo crazy about it. In fact, Dory Monson did like a 10-minute rant while he was also doing a 20-minute rant about something else. And he was mad that the local news people seemed more enthused about hockey than they should have been. Is that what it was, Ursula? That's what he was upset about?
Yeah, he thought they were faking it because most of them couldn't care less, is his opinion.
And did you?
We did not agree with that.
You did not. Okay. No. Well, Cairo 7's Deborah Horm talks to Anne Levinson about what's next for the franchise. Here we go.
So getting a team.
Now, who is Ann Levinson?
So she's involved. She's one of the investors for the Seattle Storm. So she was involved in keeping the team here.
Okay. But I didn't get that on my thing, Tom. All it says is Ann Levinson.
She explains it in the story.
Oh, she does.
Well, then, Tom, don't interrupt.
I'm trying to help the listeners, like identifying celebrities at a memorial service.
So getting a team is hard work.
Yes.
Keeping it. Is hard work too?
It is a question we have been asking all day, but hardly anyone in Seattle is more qualified to answer than Anne Levinson.
The WNBA, its great brand of basketball.
Levinson led an all-female group of investors who negotiated the sale of the Seattle Storm to them. That prevented the championship-winning WNBA team from following the Seattle Sonics to Oklahoma City back in 2008. So she says the new hockey owners have already put in place major pieces, a new practice facility, and, most importantly, building a brand new arena.
And then headquarters. You need to make sure you have a headquarters that works for the fans and for the employees. And then bringing in the right coach at the very beginning who embodied the spirit of the team and the community. And then securing players who had the kind of commitment to what we were about was very important.
But the lifeblood of any team are its fans. Plenty of them took the time to be there for the big announcement today.
There's a great fan base in this town.
But Dr. Jennifer Hoffman, who teaches in the sports management department at the University of Washington, says the entire hockey league will need to be involved to keep fans coming.
I think it's a real opportunity for the NHL to come in and learn about our community. And for the ownership group that's going to come in and build that team to really bring something that the fans here are excited about.
And Levinson agrees.
So it's going to be great to see, and I look forward to how they will showcase and shine. And for Seattle, it's just a terrific next step.
Hey, you couldn't have a better guy than Lywicki in there running this thing. When he went down there and launched the Tampa Lightning, the hockey team, he understood, Todd Lywicki understands, and his brother does as well, but Todd is, I know Todd, and he's so good at connecting a team, a franchise, to a community through all sorts of emotional links that people feel not just invested in the sport, because you want to go beyond just the slapstick and, I mean, slap shots and blue line, and be able to look at, like, the heart and soul and sort of the marketing and selling of the personalities of the team. He set up this thing in Tampa where they would do a honoring heroes with a commitment to community, and they would give $50,000 checks to people that were, you know, sort of working tirelessly behind the scenes. Nobody knew about them, but they were doing incredible things. And it became so popular that they would dim the lights. I think I told you this. They told that we're going to dim the lights, we're going to play this video, and one of our hockey players is going to read the script. And the NHL said, no, you can't dim the lights. Not once again. No, and Lywicki said, no, we're going to dim the lights. That's where we're going to do it. We're going to read this thing. We're going to show this video. You're going to meet these people. They're going to come out on the ice. We're going to give them a check for $50,000. Place is going to go crazy. It became so popular that the players on the team would say, hey, can I get a chance to read it this week? Can I read about the hero? They would fight to be able, which is not unusual for a hockey team or hockey players to fight, but for them to be able to want to be a part of sort of that connection of community and team. So it'll be interesting to see how he weaves that here in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, most of us who've had any experience with him when he was with the Seahawks, and then your stories about the Tampa Bay Lightning is, yeah, I think we have full confidence in his marketing skills that the hockey team, even if we're not as successful as the Golden Knights out of Las Vegas, who made it to the Stanley Cup their very first year in existence, a lot of long-suffering franchises scratching their heads about that one. But even if we're not as successful as the Golden Knights coming out of the chute, I think that he'll figure out a way to get us excited. And I think his first real test is to keep this enthusiasm app up for 3 years.
Right.
Because that was the only disappointing thing about yesterday's announcement was it wasn't going to be until 2021.
Yeah. You saw something yesterday while sitting on the couch watching sports. It was a guy, Tim Kalishaw. Yeah, he says that he doesn't think it's necessarily a good idea what happened in Seattle.
While I'm happy for Seattle and also happy to continue to my winning ways against Woody, I don't know that 32 teams is in the greatest interest of the National Hockey League for two reasons. One, now that's 16 teams that don't make the playoffs. You know what happens to the coaches that don't make the playoffs in the NHL? They get fired very quickly, faster than any other sport. Also, does the NHL really have...
Wow, that is annoying music. Is that underneath that whole show?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. This is when you win the contest, then you get a minute speech, and maybe they put it behind your last two cents.
Hold on, it's 9 more seconds.
Enough superstars to spread around 32 different teams. I think that's tough. I liked it with 26 teams. Maybe we need a little contraction.
No, how about that? So not enough stars if you spread them out over 32 teams.
Yeah.
Huh. All right.
I think that's interesting. It's not going to dim our enthusiasm here in Seattle because we won't have seen any of the stars. So any big team that comes to town, you know, if you know hockey at all, you know the kinds of players. So I don't think it'll impact us. But I do think there is always that concern. That's why there's a delay on expanding. Why the Sonics, we can't get the Sonics back very easily, is there's concern in the NBA of dilution of talent. And I thought it was interesting. That's the only guy I heard talk about the NHL. He's a huge NHL fan, by the way. The NHL is in danger of dilution.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Flynn gets the word from the Mueller team that don't worry, you were looking at about 7 to 15 years or something doing some jail time because you lied to the FBI. But guess what? You, Mr. Flynn, don't have to worry about it because you have cooperated to such an extent that we have decided to waive that. And thank you very much. 13 pages have been turned over. And I think there's 7 verbs and 2 adjectives and 5
right.
nouns that you can actually read in the 13 pages.
Yeah, most of it is redacted. But there are some significant things that come out of this.
Yeah.
And one is that he testified for 19 different times. I saw a lot of FBI investigators and U.S. attorneys, and I'll talk about that. And he says usually you run out of questions that after two or three times that they are stunned that he would be addressing them 19 different times, which they say also if you're kind of reading between the redacted lines, it looks like he is involved in 3 different investigations that are being carried on. And the significance is that they give him a lot of credit because they say that he was in effect caught red-handed. Once he admitted to what he had done, he was very forthcoming, and he was in early on in the campaign during the transition and the very first a couple of weeks of the administration, they found him a key cooperator. And this could only be bad news for Trump if you think there was anything untoward, because what Flynn was involved in was a lot of the dealings with Russia. He himself had interest in Russia as well. And so they think that this could be pretty significant since they're not even allowing us to find out what it was that he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this will be the death knell of the Trump presidency, but it's certainly going to they're going to take a hit, it sounds like, based on his testimony.
So 18 months ago, he was appointed, Mueller was appointed, to be able to find out was there collusion between Russia and Donald Trump and Trump's campaign. So that's what he's charged with, right? So we got Manafort, we have got Flynn, and we got Cohen. So Manafort, we got him on taxes and not registering as a foreign agent doing business overseas. So we got him on that. That's not collusion. Then we get Flynn, and we don't know what Flynn's is because we just get the stuff dribbled out right now that he's not going to do jail
time.
Yeah,
but that was a lot.
Right. Then we get Cohen.
That came out.
We get Cohen for lying as well, and Cohen's also involved in some taxes and stuff like that. But we still don't have any collusion evidence yet. We're still waiting because that's what his charge is. 18 months ago, we began to find collusion between Russia and the president, right? That's what his charge is, correct?
That's what I don't understand. That's the Fox News stance that there's no evidence of collusion. What we're doing is we're talking about all these people that might be involved in that. That he was there at the Trump Tower meeting with Russians, and the president helped him lie about what they were discussing the meeting about. And now you've got Flynn, who was involved with the Russians, and they lied about the whether there was any business interest that the president had with Russia. I mean, these are all things that are going to eventually come to a head or not.
Right, but
the idea is that there's no evidence. That's because they have not put out any evidence of that. It's all redacted.
Uh-huh.
The suspicion, though, is there's a lot more smoke than we expected in this last week with the Cohen release and with the Flynn release. So It may not be a big fire, it may not be a bonfire, but there certainly seems to be some fire because there's a lot of smoke.
Right, but just dealing with the Russians doesn't prove collusion, right? I mean, if we want to talk about dealing with the Russians, you could go over to Russia and give a speech and get paid $500,000 like Bill Clinton. That's dealing with the Russians, right? Yeah.
Well,
so
hey,
look, he dealt with the Russians, right? So we're dealing with the Russians, or let's pay a former CIA, FBI guy to go ahead or somebody from England to go over and talk to some people, not go over, but just get on the phone and speak to some Russians in order to put a dossier together to be paid for by Hillary Clinton and then be used against Donald Trump. That's dealing with the Russians as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is dealing
with the Russians.
John, meeting with a Russian is not illegal.
Oh, good.
It's lying about it, and if you're trying to do things illegally with the Russians, and this explains a lot of the attitude that Trump and the Republican GOP platform had toward the Russians, that they were cutting out things that were involved with sanctions. Flynn apparently promised Putin that we were going to get rid of the sanctions. Don't worry about the sanctions that the Obama administration put on. Well, if it's a quid pro quo, which it seems like it could be, then that's illegal and that's improper.
Yeah.
The fact that the GOP platform had a thing that said, yeah, we were going to arm the Ukrainians, and then they took that out at the request of Putin, makes it seem like there's a much more of an arrangement going on than not.
Right.
Again, you're right, nothing is proven, but to keep mentioning, well, there's no evidence yet, well, that's what this investigation is about and why everything is redacted, because if there is a case, they'll finally level it when he gives out his final report.
Oh, yeah, I got it. I understand.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Just saying that's what he's supposed to do. We just happen to catch some of these little guys that are scurrying around with other things, and the people seem to feel this thing that, this is it. This is the beginning. The noose is starting to tighten on Donald Trump. No, you're getting Cohen for one thing, Manafort for another, and Finn for another. But, no, Tom. But what
national
what
security
point?
Advisor, campaign manager, personal lawyer?
I got
those
that.
Are big. You don't get
show
okay,
me collusion.
You don't get much closer.
Show me collusion.
Yeah, they are, and obstruction.
No, show me collusion.
Yeah, well, the thing is, there may be collusion,
there
but
may
there
be.
Definitely seems to be obstruction.
Okay, obstruction of justice. Fine, they got him on that.
Yes,
right.
That's what they got. That's what they got Nixon on.
And Nixon decides
obstruction of justice.
Yeah, I understand. With what he knew that they were coming after him, and he says, fire this person, get rid of all of these people, wipe all this sort of stuff out. And it was like
a
nuclear bomb
FBI.
Move on himself, blowing him entire self up in order to be able to stop the investigation that he thought was the media driven that was going to destroy his career. He was paranoid, and it ended up being the end of him. So we'll see. I guess pointing in the direction that they got Flynn. Flynn gets a break. Let's find the collusion. I'll tell you one thing that's most interesting. It doesn't matter the politics that's happening here in the United States. Go to Nigeria. And you know, Tom, you and I love Nigeria. The Nigerian people you have bet. Been very, very good to us. And which we'd like to try.
Closest thing we know to Scandinavia.
By the way, we do have a Dutch story a little later on. But let's explain to everybody that when we go to do this story, we have to be sensitive because we are very, very popular in Nigeria. Do you have the facts on this Nigeria thing, or do we need to go to Jacob on it?
No, you take Jacob. It's all hearsay for me. Okay, Jacob is the source.
Yes, and this is information I got from our podcast producer here at Cairo, Aaron Mason. But his information indicates that there's analysis to suggest that the Tom and Curly Show is number 72 on the charts for news and politics in the country of Nigeria.
72 out of 70.
Come on now, Tom.
I love that.
I do
too. We're big in Nigeria.
So we will do. And by the way, when they sent us that information, they also told us that if we were to wire $15,000 into an account in England, there's a lawyer who has money for us for a Nigerian prince that would like us to take some part of that money. And he needs $15,000 from us. No, in all seriousness, we're number 72. Yeah. On listen
on
to
our podcast, no less.
Okay, so here comes a Nigerian story for you. The Nigerian president explains that he's not a clone. He needs to explain this because he disappeared for a little while, and then word started to circulate that that's not the same guy.
Somebody assumes that I'm clone. No wonder I forgot it until I was reminded by him.
Will we be able to understand him at some point?
I do have the transcription underneath this cut that you can walk through if you need.
Someone is suggesting I am a clone. A lot of people hope that I was dead and hope that I died. But it's real me, I assure you.
Yes, a lot of people's hoped that I was dead.
Or is that?
And hope that I died. It's
real
me, I assure you.
It is good to hear his voice there in Nigeria. He is a big believer.
Now, there's a reason why there are all these rumors. He left the country for 5 months because of some undisclosed illness, and so he was hanging out in Britain. Mm-hmm. So in those 5 months, I think a lot of his enemies decided, hey, we don't even know if this guy's alive. So they started spreading this rumor, at least that's the version, a lookalike guy from Sudan called Jubril. And so now that he's coming back to his country, he's going to celebrate his 76th birthday. Mm-hmm. He just wants to assert that I am not a fake, I'm not a clone, I'm the real deal. Oh. But he still won't tell us what his undisclosed illness was.
You know what, Tom? He doesn't need to. In a country as rich and beautiful as Nigeria, the Federal Republic of Nigeria.
Right. Summer in Nigeria. Let's go, John.
Head on over to Chad. We're going to do a live performance in Chad. We'll come right back. Tom and Curly right here.
We're 72. We're 72.
Alrighty, here we go. Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Thanks a lot, Lake Washington Windows and Doors. You know, if you've got a drafty home, there's a pretty good chance that there's some air that's seeping out. That's the warm air heading outside. And that might be through a window that's just not closing. Maybe the seal's broken on it. Is that the sound of a seal breaking?
Sure, why not?
Why don't you look in your bag of tricks there, Mr. Bag of Tricks Man, and find just the breaking of a seal. It's more subtle, because Lake Washington Windows doesn't go to replacing broken windows. I mean, they can. But it's more like about a seal, like a seal. All right, here we go. Lake Washington Windows and Doors. What's that?
We've also got to give out a code word.
Okay, I'm paying some bills here. Since we went wall to wall with the funeral, trying to make up some lost dollars, right, Tom?
What's the code word, John?
Code word is drive. By the end of the show, you need to drive. Write the word drive. Go to mynorthwest.com/win. Enter the code word drive. Now, here's the deal. It expires at the end of this show. This show expired just about the time it got started today. But you need to get the word drive in there. If not, you got to sit through Dory's show for Dory to give you a new code word. So that'll scare the hell out of you. This is a game coming up on the 23rd of December. It's Seahawks takes on the Chiefs. We'll have no trouble dispatching of that team. They're crap. Come on in, everybody. Get an opportunity to possibly win two tickets as the Seahawks take on the Kansas City Chiefs. Write the word drive. Go to mynorthwest.com/win and enter the code word. Okay, there we go.
Patrick Mahomes, exciting player.
Mitchell, Oh, right. Did you find a seal? Okay. So Lake Washington Windows and Doors will help you with broken seals that may be on your window. Okay. That's a seal. All righty. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you. And we're big in Nigeria. Did I mention that?
We're moving on up.
Here we go. All right. The reason many ultra-rich people aren't satisfied with their wealth, this story comes up at least two or three times a year. I saw one, a really cool one called Don't Envy the Super Rich. They're actually miserable. This is from the Wall Street Journal from 2011. But people like to see the rich. And what did F. Scott Fitzgerald say with the Great Gatsby? The rich are different from you and me. Is that what it was?
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
So the idea that they're never satisfied with their wealth, they still want more and more because they have a distorted view of how much money they have and how much money they need.
Well, actually, I'm not sure that it's a distorted view of how much money they have. I think they know to the penny how much they have. The question is, what's the value of it? For most of us that are just trying to get by in life, we value money because it can get us things. But once you have enough money, we're talking about the rich, mm-hmm. you can get just about anything you want, any material object or any kind of, you know, concept. So how do they, you know, how do they spend the rest of their lives? What do they do? They say that for humanity is basically we look at two things. Am I doing better than I was before? Mm-hmm. And for them, that is one of the key questions, because the other one is, am I doing better than other people? Well, clearly the super rich are doing better than 99% of us, but they end up moving in. They start hanging out with the top 1%. This sounds a lot like you, John, when you talk about, because you have more money than anybody I know, but you say, I'm a piper compared to the people that I hang out with, that when you hang out with the super rich, you look around and suddenly you don't feel that rich anymore. I may be worth, you know, $100 million. Yeah, but Jerry's got $105 million. Larry's got $75 million. That's not really that much. So the best way for the rich to decide to value themselves is to make more. Mm. They talked to one guy who interviewed all the luxury rich types. And they said, how much money do you need before you think you'd relax? And every one of them, no matter how much rich they were, said, at least 2 to 3 times more than I have right now. Not for any purchasing power, but just for this sense of accomplishment.
Wow. Well, I think that's human nature. I heard a guy that owned a car dealership. He said, you know why you get a new car? And I said, no, why? Because your neighbor bought a new car. So when your neighbor buys a new car, you buy a new car. So this thing still exists within the rich people, the super rich people. And it's, what is it known in the boat business as 7-foot-itis or 9-foot-itis, that your friend gets a boat that's 40 feet, so you get one that's 45. And once you get that, the other guy's got another one and this and that. Probably the best example of the rich not being satisfied with how much they have. I went down to New Zealand to cover a story on the America's Cup, and I was there with one of the McCalls. It might have been Craig McCall. Uh-huh. And we're standing on the dock there, and we watched this giant yacht come in. And it had a half-court or a full-court basketball on the back with plexiglass, like real backboards, right? And he said, that boat was the boat that everybody talked about last year. And I said, oh, okay. He goes, because that boat usurped a boat from the year before that only had one basketball hoop. This one had two. And he goes, now, that guy came in here last year and everybody thought that was the greatest thing. He goes, now you see this boat over here to the right? And I said, yeah. He goes, what does that have? I said, well, that's got a basketball, two basketball hoops as well. And he goes, yep. And the floor, which is teak, separates. And what's underneath that teak floor, Tom?
A swimming pool?
A swimming pool.
Of course, yeah.
So the one guy's got the half a hoop, the other guy comes in with two, and the other guy comes in with two, plus a swimming pool underneath. So you're always trying to one-up it in order to be able to feel that you have really, truly succeeded at something, because you are never satisfied with your lot in life. Probably one of the best quotes is that it is not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more that is poor.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense. Well, gentlemen, you hang out with these kind of people. On average, though, don't you think that they're probably happier than your average Joe?
Sure. The guy with $10 million is no happier than a guy with $12 million. Or no, 8 million. I don't know. I mean, they have other problems that I can't possibly imagine, right? When it comes to, I think the biggest thing, the one thing when they surveyed 120 super rich, these are people that have at least $20 million to $200 million. You have to have at least $25 million to be interviewed by this, the folks from the Gates Foundation hired a polling firm to talk to 120 people that had $25 million. And they said the biggest problem is with the money is the children. They said money runs the danger of giving them a perceived view of the world, and money can mess them up and give them a sense of entitlement and prevent them from developing a strong sense of empathy and compassion. They said it actually becomes almost a poison that the child is drinking every single day to be constantly surrounded by so much of it. And it destroys them and their ability to sort of stand on their own 2 feet.
Yeah, watch out, Charlie.
I don't have that. I hang around those people only because I'm in front of them taking their money at auctions, Tom. I'm not friends with them.
Right. Well, you know, and also speaking on that issue, there's another good article that Jacob found about how conspicuous consumption is now considered vulgar, that the truly rich are inconspicuous consumers. And what do they do? Because since you can buy anything, they don't buy things anymore. What they do is they put their money, and speaking of kids, how they try to reproduce their class position, they have boutique health care. So, like, they go to the nicest gyms, and they have the best kind of workouts, so they're healthier. And educationally, they get them into the best schools so they can be smart, not just rich, but smart and cultured, and they take them on, they quote, enriching trips to the Galapagos. You know, in other words, trying to teach their kids about the world so they have a much richer experience of the world, not just, you know, the kinds of moneyed things that they can afford. But I like this idea. They said that some of these, a lot of these super rich people right now are hedge fund investors, and a lot of them realize they made their huge masses of money based on a couple of lucky hits, that there were other people that they just haven't hit it. And so they feel insecure about their own cultural touchstones and their intelligence, and so they're always trying to beef that component up. They say nothing works better in these kind of crowds than making a sly reference to a New Yorker article, because if you can pick that up, it shows, wow, you really are smart. You read the New Yorker.
All right. But, hey, are they number 72 in Nigeria? I ask you that.
With a bullet.
From right back. Don't mention bullets in Nigeria, Tom. That's not true.
Okay.
Here we go, Tom Curley Show, number 72 in Nigeria. On to you. Hey, you got some letters that are going to come pouring in here from the mailman, Tom. Here comes the mailman now with those letters. Hey, mailman.
Hey.
I also love the world.
As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Is my pizza going to be covered in cocaine today?
No,
it isn't.
It's Wednesday.
Oops.
Yeah, that's all right. No. Tom, there's no oops in this show.
Yeah, you bet.
There's no crying in baseball. There's no oops in this show. Hey, teeny tiny lady.
Hello.
Hello to you too. She tells us about that letter of the day, but let's get started now.
Okay, let's start off with a very moving Bush funeral. 425 writes in the book The Residence, a book about the help staff at the White House and their views of the presidents over the decades, President Bush and Barbara Bush were the best loved by all who worked there.
425. I like the statement about Washington politics. Quote, on the high road of humility, you'll never have to worry about heavy traffic.
Yeah, that was a great line. And at 253, John, the Undertaker's signature move is the tombstone. Get your facts straight.
I always thought it was, what did I say it was? Oh, the choke slam and then the long ride power bomb.
I trust 253.
Power bomb. Les Munez, 925, says CBS should divide the severance package between the victims.
Ah, there's an idea. Mm. On the hockey business, 360 writes in, hockey, blah, blah, blah. Mm. I'll only be happy when the Sonics return.
And 406 says, we should call the hockey team the Krakens. That way the fans can be crackheads.
And 253, too bad hockey will be in downtown Seattle. I would have gone if it was going to be in the other location because of parking. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully in the next 3 years they'll be able to fix that.
Sean in Arlington says, on the notion that there isn't enough hockey stars to spread around 32 teams, the NFL calls BS to that notion. 32 NFL teams, almost every one of them has at least two stars. The premise is basically saying there are less than 32 excellent hockey players. I bet all the hockey players disagree with that idea. Where's my gong?
Next.
Wait a minute. We're now giving listeners sound effects?
Jeez. Look out. We got another one, John. About my broadcasting from the couch? Yeah. 650. Can you guys ding a bell every time John says couch? The curly couch counter.
Do I really say it that often?
Well, every time you mention me, you do.
All right. Well, that's where you are. I just do facts, yeah. Tom. Wes and Q Alep says, I was just in Bali. It was so weird. No one there had heard of you guys. Love you. Wes from the road less traveled. I mean Q Alep.
Yeah. Bali mustn't be close enough to Nigeria. Joe Fain, 425. If Fain can be charged with sexual assault because there isn't statute of limitations, then why can't Ed Murray be charged?
Oscar Host, 206, says, everybody comes up short. Kevin Hart's already short.
And a 360. The reason why everyone has hated the Oscars for the last decade is because whoever is hosting, or winning for that matter, can't resist making it political on either side of the aisle. It's an old, tired act that most Americans are sick of. Viewers used to look to the Oscars to be entertained and for an escape from the real world for a little while. Now it's a guarantee to hear long-winded rants or bad jokes and poor taste. With so many other options, viewers will spend their time elsewhere.
Sean in Arlington says, might be first Oscars I ever watched knowing Kevin Hart is hosting. Most comedians make me cringe one way or another, but Kevin Hart, as you both noted, has an accessible style. You almost feel like his story is happening to you in the audience. Kudos to Kevin for stepping up and signing to host.
Huh. Oh, that's good. Facebook comments about Johnny hitting himself in the face with his headphones yesterday.
Yeah.
Freddie, did it knock some sense into him?
Lonnie, was Tom getting too much sympathy?
David, I'll send my, quote, thoughts and prayers.
And talk about rich people. Rod in Bothell says, hey, guys, remember the rich are to be pitied because they cannot console themselves by thinking all of their problems can be solved if only they had money.
On Christmas, Nelson in Seattle says, can you please find and air Curly versus the Copier from years ago? I think it was the day after Christmas or New Year's Day.
Do you remember this? I have no memory of this.
Yes, I forget who it was, and I yelled at him because why do I have to fill the copier with paper? I have 9 Emmys, which I'm going to put on a string and swing them around my head. Yeah, you never seen the video of it?
Actually, now that you describe it, I have seen the video, but I couldn't track it down. It's not on the Facebook page anymore. At least it might be, and I just couldn't find it.
I just remember screaming because why am I filling? How am I going to win awards while I'm filling the copier? Is what I yell. Getting jokes up on the air. Larry in West Seattle says, "I don't know how you do it, Curly, but my crew, some of the work release, some on work release, some on probation, and some most citizens waiting around for the next elevator port, were all teared up when you and Tom started the hormones flowing. The power of your show does bring out the better nature of our angels." Oh, that's nice. Thank you, Larry.
That is nice.
Yeah. Okay.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Letter of the day, Tom.
Area code 253. The real question is, how are Dory's Nigerian ratings?
Boom. Wow. Wow.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Out of time. Bye-bye.